CliffCentral.com.
Do 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 do. There's my girlfriend Cardi B. I like it.
Mm-hmm. When you have a bit
she fixed her teeth.
It's Tembu going on.
Bought her mom a house.
So it's Cardi and Charlize. Yours, Tembu.
Cardi and Charlize.
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind
of the best of both worlds, ne?
Oh, you're kind of over Charlize.
Yeah, I'm sort of over her. Oh. Well, until I see another really beautiful picture of her or something, then I'll suddenly be back on. Very superficial, Sia. I really am superficial. It's I have no, there's no depth when it comes to that kind of thing.
I saw a paparazzi shot of Charlize recently, and we'll forgive her because she is filming something.
Mm.
But her hairstyle,
it was terrible.
You didn't even take her back to Benoni; took her back to Brakpan.
Yes, yes. So, Pumi was telling me about a movie with Will Smith in it.
Gemini Man.
Ang Tell me about this.
Ang Lee is the director.
Right.
It comes out, I think, next month. The trailer's up, so you can YouTube the trailer. And it is, what they have done is they have CG recreated 23-year-old Will Smith. And it's Will Smith today versus Will Smith back then. So... the plot is he's an assassin of some kind.
An
action film, but and they're just these two guys kind of following each other. It is unbelievable. And the thing that's most unbelievable about it is Will Smith obviously plays both characters.
Right.
But what they did to get him to be the 23-year-old is they've used CGI technology where they've got like tracking on his face, and they've also watching all the footage of Will Smith back in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, young Will Smith Boys, and they've kind of recreated that Will Smith.
Yeah.
And when you watch him talk about when he was doing acting as well, is he was also kind of trying to live up to the Will Smith that we all know. Because we remember, we all know what Will Smith was like when he was 23. We remember that guy.
Yeah.
And so he has to kind of also act like that guy. It is the technology applied in making this film happen is unbelievable. But also what this what this technology makes a reality too is they can basically recreate
anyone,
Bruce Lee,
yeah,
and bring him back to life to act in a new film, or Marilyn Monroe,
yeah,
or, you know.
So it means we can have any actor or actress we like, and we don't even have to pay them. The studios must be loving this.
It's mind-blowing.
Isn't it?
It's mind-blowing. It is. I can't wait to see the film, because even the trailer actually looks really good. It looks like the kind of film you want to see. They first used that technology in Rogue One. I don't know if you saw Rogue
One.
Yeah,
with Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, when they recreated Carrie Fisher. It's
how was that?
Because so cool.
I didn't watch it. How was,
no, it was
Carrie's,
it was quite scary. I mean,
appearance, did it seem realistic?
Was you could kind of see. I mean, if they hadn't said anything, which I think they should have just not said anything.
Yeah, you wouldn't have. You know what? It's not
you
like
were
when we
it.
Saw. So it's not like when we saw the hologram of Tupac.
Yeah,
it's not that experience.
Yeah,
this is.
Because that is still...
That was bad.
Yeah, that...
Yeah, so that was still a little dodgy, that technology. But this is so cool. It's Will Smith. It's like the Will Smith from The Fresh Prince.
Yeah. I've got to watch this. This sounds amazing.
I'm still keeping an open mind, because I do understand with technology and innovation, it's a hit and a miss when you're still starting out. And you still have to experiment, and you still have to get things right. But I think it is the first initial steps that have made me go, ooh, that have made me side-eye. It is the Tupac thing. I remember when, I think it was a year or two after Michael Jackson passed away, they released new music and they had him perform at an award show. But granted, that was a hologram as well. It wasn't CGI. Mm-hmm. Oh, horror, horror, horror. And now, most recently, tickets are out for a Whitney Houston hologram tour. And I don't know who would pay.
Look, the holograms are also getting better. They're not as good as they look in Star Trek. But
I can't wait until, you know, I mean, that's immortality, you know, where someone can come back and perform their very best show, and it feels like they're really on stage.
It's still freaky. Have you not seen Black Mirror?
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Sure.
But you see, that's why I favor mortality sometimes. There's something about knowing that you will die and be gone.
Yeah, it gives you urgency. That makes it go like,
yeah,
sure.
It was a moment in time and that's it. You can never experience it anymore.
You can't convince me. I would still much rather take immortality. I know that there are people who disagree strongly with that on ethical grounds and all kinds of other things. If I knew I could last forever, I mean, obviously, you know, you'd still die if a train went over you and that kind of thing. But if you didn't get diseases, if you never got sick, if you didn't get older, if you didn't physically age, I'd be happy to keep going for 1,000 years.
Really?
Yes,
really. What would you do with 1,000 years?
Are you kidding? Do you know how much there is to learn? How much there is out there, how much there is to see.
Do you know how many people read, are still going to annoy you?
To experience. Yes, but if you've got 1,000 years, you don't get annoyed. Get annoyed over 1,000 years because you know that the whatever the person's doing that annoys you now is going to be gone in a year, a day, a week. You've got 1,000 years. You don't let that stuff bother you.
1,000 more years of the neighbor's dog.
No, because the dog's not going to last 1,000 years. Neighbor's dog's going to last its usual 12 or so, and you've got 1,000.
So I do like the idea of having a finite period of time. So there are so many things out there to read, to see.
Sure.
And you know, Gareth, I love watching, listening,
sure,
reading. I love all of those things. But I love the fact that I don't have infinite time. Therefore, I have to be picky.
Yes.
I have to pick the things that I do. So when you go traveling,
you have to prioritize.
When you go traveling, you actually have to do something that's gonna like be the thing. When you're reading books, like now, there's so much stuff to watch on, and there's gonna be more. There's gonna be more with all of this, with Amazon, with Disney, with all of these streaming services. There's gonna be so much stuff out there that's all available for you to entertain you, to inform you, to educate you. You gotta be picky, man. With a lot of time on your hands, the rubbish filters through, Baba.
I'm sorry. I'll take the time. Honestly, because you can afford it then. There's no rush.
You don't want the rubbish.
No.
Filter and out the rubbish.
And then when do you want to call it a day? When you decide to?
Yeah, you can look back on 1,000 years of living and you can say, I've done what I wanted to do. And then you can just click your fingers and it's all done. That would be cool.
Sure.
See, that, that's always been my thing. With all this, the kind of vampire literature.
Yeah,
I'm always more drawn to those guys, the vampires that feel kind of like, oh God, this has been a long time. You know, this is like all this time that I've lived through.
No.
All my life I had to fight.
No, yeah. They don't have to fight. They're like vampires, dude. They're strong. They drink blood.
Millie Bobby Brown, who she is?
From Stranger Things,
that's
right?
That's right. She reckons that the Earth is flat. Do you want to hear what she has to say?
Okay, listen, sweetie. The
planet is flat. I was watching a conspiracy. Wait, I don't know if that person is still watching this. Okay, I don't know if somebody's still watching this, but we were watching a conspiracy theory the other night, and let me tell you, we were watching, was it Shane Dawson? Answer my question.
She shouldn't live 1,000 years.
Was it Shane Dawson?
They should certainly not do a Stranger Fiction.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
Stranger Things 4, like they're doing.
It was Shane Dawson.
Oh, come on, hurry up. Anyway, she now admits it.
Anyway, guys, there are so many facts that it's flat.
Facts.
I mean, think about it. Like, think about it. Like, okay, guys, you don't even know. You don't even know. I think I am a, what do they call it?
flat earther, you moron.
A flat... I think they call it a flat earther.
Yes.
Anyway.
Jesus.
Do you see?
So there we go.
You've just wasted, like... Yeah, 2 minutes of our like, if we had 1,000 years, we would have not watched that 2 minutes. If we had less time, we would have been like, yeah, I'm not gonna waste my time on this.
And Millie Bobby Brown.
And then what happens if you wonderfully have 1,000 years and then a Millie Bobby Brown also has 1,000 years? That means you have more years of dealing with someone like that.
No, because you don't have to deal with her.
But also he's not filtering it out. He's just like, I've got 1,000 years, I can watch all the rubbish.
Yeah. You got enough time. There's no rush.
Filter out the rubbish.
You know you can, I mean, you can make an investment now and you can say, I'll take that out in 500 years' time. Think about that. Just think about how awesome that is. I don't know how any of you...
Depending on what that investment is.
You're all insane. You're all crazy that you wouldn't go for this.
Depending on what that investment is, it could go from 54 Rand a share to 5 cents like EOH.
Or Steinhoff. But hang on. If you weren't going to get older physically, and you weren't going to lose your mind, and you could guarantee 1,000 years of living in the current state you have, you wouldn't take it? You're mad. You would. Come on. Be honest.
No.
Still not.
Nah.
Mm-mm. Oh, you two are so...
Sorry, I so also... At
maybe,
this,
okay, so if I had... 1,000 years when I was 28.
Okay, let's say you can do that.
if I had my 40-year-old mind and my 28-year-old body.
Well, now you're asking for a lot, but you could. I mean, just think about how wise you'd
that's
be.
That's the thing. You see, my thing is there's so many you give up so much to get other things, right? So you don't have your 28-year-old body. But you have a 40-year-old mind. You know? Gareth, nah. You're not convincing me on this one.
And all I right. also haven't hit my stride in terms all of age. Right. So I won't pick my 18-year-old self because I was a mess. I was even a mess.
We wouldn't pick your 18-year-old self.
No.
Just as a final thought on this, imagine how wise you'd be after 150 years. You would know, you'd be able to avoid all kinds of pain and anguish, and you'd be sensible and sage about everything, and you know, you'd be the kind of person who could dispense just a little bit of wisdom to everybody to make everyone's life better. You'd be able to do legacy things almost every day, knowing that there's no rush. If it takes us 25 years to build that monument, then so be it, because I've got 25 years.
But the older you get, right? So I look at my, you know, 94-year-old grandmother who's got no fucks to give.
Mm. Yeah.
Your level of like, I've seen this movie before. I've seen all of this shit. It don't matter. None of that. You know what I'm saying? Like the older you get, this is why I'm unconvinced, Gareth, because I think that the older you get, the more kind of like, I don't give a shit.
Really? Mm. I find that very sad. I don't think I'll
the more kind of I, because
I
of
hope
the,
I don't ever get like that,
dude. Because I you're just
living.
Like
I love
people
living.
Suck.
No,
I love living, but like the older you get, the more you realize how many annoying
Millie Bobby Browns,
Millie Bobby Browns, they are, and that there are more but of them a, than there are of the non-annoying types.
But she's a kid. It doesn't really bother me. Even now that she's a flat earther, she's. Yeah,
but when you're 150, do you know how many? Kids
they'll
are.
Be
oh come on
anyone you 50 years younger than
you guys
you is
are
like
crazy
a
all right
kid.
Well, if we're placing our bets now, I'm saying I'm going for the immortality. Bring it on.
Nah.
I now have Celine Dion stuck in my head.
Yeah, you won't. You're
brilliant. Immortality.
Oh my god, please stop.
We are 150 years of dealing with this. Come on,
Gareth. Stop, Sia. All right, let's get on with it. We've got things to talk about this morning that actually matter.
Okay.
All right, what's in the news? What do we need to know?
So firstly, let's just kick things off with this because I mentioned it earlier. So I guess we can all learn together. This is some of what you need to know now that the new demerit system is now law. So the Arto Bill has been signed into law by President Cyril Ramaphosa, and the legislation has been designed to change driving behavior through the implementation of this demerit system, particularly in Johannesburg and Tshwane. So this is just a breakdown, as simply as possible, of what all it all entails. So each driver starting off has 0 points.
Okay.
The maximum permissible number of points is 12. So points work on this basis where they all add up, with a different number of points assigned to specific traffic infringements together with a fine. So if a driver accumulates 12 or more points, their license will be suspended for a period of 3 months.
12 or more points?
Yes.
Yeah, but what are they going to do? Just stop driving? We don't have public transport. What do they want us to do?
That supports us readily. Yeah, I hear you.
Uber everywhere for 3 months? Send the bill to the traffic department.
1 point is reduced every 3 months if no further violations occur within the 3 month period.
So if you behave yourself,
yes,
those will come back off.
But should a driver exceed 3 suspensions, they could lose their license permanently.
So then you just buy a fake one.
Oh.
So that lady with the 200 odd...
200,000 rands. Yeah.
The 274.
That one woman.
Yeah, he's
that
still, one, he's that still 61. Just, yeah.
They arrested a 60-something-year-old woman, and she had 274
warrants.
Not just fines, warrants.
Against her fines. Yes. Come on, guys. Yeah. So she's never seeing a license ever again in her life.
Mm-mm.
So a license can be cancelled if it has been suspended for a third time. So now let's just, this is how all of the points are broken down, and this is what you can get points for. So some of the traffic offences that could increase your demerit points are driving without a license, that's equals to 4 demerit points. Driving under the influence of any sort of intoxicating substance, that's 6 demerit points.
Wow. Halfway to being suspended.
Mm-hmm. Using and holding a cell phone while driving.
How many?
That's 1 demerit point.
Hmm.
Speeding can be anywhere from 2 to 6 points, yes, depending on the speed limit. And this is determined by court. And then skipping a stop sign in a light vehicle is 1 demerit point. And for buses and trucks, it's 2 points.
Hmm. We're in trouble.
And this is already in law, people.
Yeah. But you remember we had a series that we did earlier this year, and we got the dude who knows all about this. What's his name? Can't remember his name now.
A pig. Pig Spotter.
No. Pig Spotter brought someone with him, and he's like the expert in this.
That one.
Dembowski.
Dembowski.
Yeah. Howard Dembowski. He's the guy.
Wayne Duvenage.
Oh, yes, I'm thinking of Wayne Duvenage.
This is a guy called Dembowski, Howard Dembowski. He's like the guy when it comes to understanding the traffic rules and the laws of the road and what the municipal rules are and all those kinds of things. He knows everything. We had him on.
Yeah, if you feel like it's all doom and gloom just yet, I don't know, maybe this might make you feel better. This new demerit point system is very similar to what's already in use in several European countries.
Okay.
And has now just been slightly changed for South African road users. And this new system, though, we have to know, will also prevent you from renewing your driver's or vehicle license if you don't pay your traffic fines.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm happy to avoid as much of that as possible by Ubering around, which I do, especially on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't speed anymore. Occasionally get 1 or 2 fines here and there that are a couple of $100. Pay those.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't drive under the influence, so I don't have to worry about that. Just trying to think what else there might be. I don't use my phone. No, I have used my phone before, I'm a lot more careful about that now. So I think I'll be okay.
Speed
is the problem. Speed the one you're worried about.
I'm guilty of using my phone, and not to make myself sound like a saint, I really don't text on the phone, but I often use my phone when I'm navigating somewhere.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't have a phone holder by, you know, my vents or by my windshield, because I think you're asking for trouble there when we know how prevalent smash and grabs are in Johannesburg. So I usually have my phone on my lap, and then every now and then I pull it up to look at it on eye view level. And I think, well, if that's a point, okay then.
Yeah, and then of course...
What is that one demerit point?
This is a good point made by Matthew. He says, until it's linked to eTOL, then it becomes a problem. Because they will do that eventually. That's how they're going to get you to pay your e-tolls. Mm. Thought about that. Okay, the fact that Shane Dawson is the least credible person. This is someone talking about Millie Bobby Brown. Jay says, the fact that she's getting her information from a mentally unstable YouTuber scares me. Shane Dawson is the least credible person to believe. I didn't even know who Shane Dawson is. I'm so glad. I'm kind of proud of myself that I don't know who he is.
Gareth, I want you to watch a movie. It's with Justin Timberlake, but bear with me. It's called In Time. It's a world where currency is actually time. And there's people that live up to 1,000 years, like you're saying, but they buy more time by stealing time from other people's lives. You don't grow past the age of 25, right? That's your maximum age limit. But there's like a guy that's 150 years old and his 25-year-old body. So I think that's the kind of thing that you might be interested in.
If that was possible, I would steal all of your lives. All of them.
Wow.
Like the Highlander.
I would not think twice. I swear to God.
You wouldn't feel bad about it?
I'd go around harvesting lives like a vampire.
Do you remember that TV show Highlander?
Yeah.
Chop off
the heads and it gives you another 1,000 years.
And it gives you years.
I remember watching that Justin Timberlake movie. It came out, I'd say, like 2012, 2013. And you could look at your forearm, and that's when it was like a ticking.
Brilliant.
You see,
clock.
This is what happens when you think you have time. You watch movies with Justin Timberlake.
I'm going to watch this.
I think that's the problem.
I'm going to watch this. But Jean, thank you.
I think I might be wrong.
If that ever happens, you better hide from me because I'm coming to get your life.
But I think what also ended up happening in that movie, which is sad, was that rich people were organizing to steal time from poor people
always.
As well. Yeah.
Always.
There's definitely a profit motive here.
Yo. If I knew that come hell or high water, I'm gone by 25.
You're going to live large.
Your every day would be a party.
You see, this is my thing. When you have a limited amount of time,
yes. You
make a bigger effort.
It would be a party.
Carl says they don't issue points for things that aren't dangerous or can't cause accidents. So it's unlikely you'll get points for not paying e-tolls. Well, Carl, I don't know. I don't trust these guys at all. You can't trust, you just don't trust government. Don't be stupid. Very dangerous. We've learned from this. All right, don't forget we've got Blind History in an episode featuring Saladin coming up in a short while. That's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Also, a little bit later on, How's It China? Episode 3. And today we're going to talk about language. We're also going to talk about the Chinese school in Pretoria. And we'll have Miss Angela Liu, who is the deputy principal, and Mr. John Gelling, who's the principal, and Refilwe Mashiani, who's a grade 11 pupil there at the Chinese school.
Very, very cool.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that.
You
can learn a few words.
Just a few.
A few words.
Yeah, we'll see how.
Shishé.
What?
I forgot what it was. I just remember I used it a lot in China. Wait,
don't say it.
No, it was something nice. Like, thank you.
Millie Bobby Brown. Someone wants to comment on Millie Bobby Brown. Keith says, this is what happens when you pull your child out of school to be an actor. The fact that it is now acceptable for people to have little to no mathematical or scientific education is damning, and what will lead to the collapse of society and plunging us idiots into the next dark age. Sure.
For 1,000 years.
Yeah, there we go. So I don't disagree with you. It's hilarious that there are people who think the earth is flat. It's hilarious. It's fantastic. I love it.
She's 15 years old, mind you.
You've got to be able to write some people off. Like everybody always says, you know, all people are equal.
Yes.
And, like you should be able to just put some people in the rubbish bin and ignore
throw
them.
The whole child away.
Yeah. So Millie Bobby Brown may be very entertaining as an actress, but otherwise she should just be ignored. Mm. And here it's quite obvious. If someone says to you, they're a flat earther, you can ignore them from that point on. You don't have to talk to them. You don't have to addle your own brain by being around people like
don't
that.
Stress yourself out taking them seriously.
There we go. See? It's that easy. Life is good if you ignore Millie Bobby Brown. All right, let's move on.
Here's something really scary to think about. But the Gauteng province is calling it a vast human tragedy that deserves higher attention.
Uh-oh.
Party people, the province of Gauteng is imploring all of us and asking all of us to really make some headway with this. There are thousands of bodies in Gauteng morgues that are just sitting there. The worst of all, in a lot of these cases, in a lot of these cases, some bodies have already been identified but haven't been collected.
Sure.
How does that happen?
People don't care.
How do you not care about a body when once you've identified it? So currently they've released numbers from their 2018 and 2019 financial year. I'm not lying. I'm not laughing.
How many buddies?
So right now.
Did they say hundreds?
Thousands.
Thousands?
1,117 to be particular.
But they must just put them in tomato cases and bury them.
Yeah. If no one wants them, I mean.
You know, we watch all those shows like Utatako and all of those things, right? So some of those identified bodies, people came to identify the body, but they're just like, I don't care about this person enough to spend money burying them.
What?
They should get a pauper's funeral. They must, the province should give people 2 weeks to pick up your body. If you don't pick up your body, we're putting it in a tomato crate and we're putting it in the ground.
Yeah, I agree. It's so much trouble. See, nobody wants these people.
They're dead. What are you going to do with them?
Okay. You know, for the bodies that haven't been identified, you know, I think that's one thing. They haven't been identified.
How long must you keep them?
Yeah, I think that they you can just...
Even the ones that have been identified, if you haven't been to collect your body in 2 weeks, we are putting it in a tomato crate.
You don't care about... If you don't collect them within 2 weeks, you don't care about them.
Yeah, and you know, a body is not something that is just by the by.
In fact, they shouldn't even put them in the ground. They should incinerate them. You know, at the hospitals, they've got incinerators. They should. It's like a cremation. Why? It's like a cremation.
Whoa.
I agree.
You don't forget a body like you've forgotten a pair of glasses somewhere.
Apparently, you can. There you go. 1,000 what?
1,117 bodies in the province of Gauteng.
This is what I love about South Africa is we all get upset when we hear about like 3 people killed in a traffic accident. But there are people living among us now who know for a fact that relatives of theirs are sitting in a fridge somewhere and they're not going to go and fetch them. We are not nice people.
How do you feel about
beings.
That?
They should put them in the incinerators.
I'm with Pumi.
You made me think of a different take on the story because maybe it is, you know, my mother who was never there for me and, you know, grew up on the other side of town and left me alone with my siblings and now she's dead. She's never really meant anything to me. Now I'm notified that she's dead. I'm like, well,
okay.
She doesn't really matter to me. Okay.
Put her in the incinerator. What else are you going to do? Listen, these bodies have to, according to the law, we've got to try our best to identify them. And then there's a window period. Hmm. When that window period's finished, like Pumi says.
Really, Sia, I thought this. So, I totally see. It doesn't need a discussion here.
I think the province is shooting themselves in the foot by also admitting to this.
They should just do it.
The province has also said that they've been struggling since 2006 to develop an internet system that would assist people to identify bodies.
Oh, imagine that system. You go on and you just check out the faces or something.
You know, like Find My iPhone?
Find My iPhone. Sure.
Find My dead body.
Even Find My father.
Even better, says Taryn. Donate those bodies to science.
Amen. Amen, Taryn. Yeah. Amen.
You know what? Yes, donate them to science. Harvest the organs for people who... Oh, well,
and Pavalo says the same thing. Why aren't these bodies donated to academic hospitals for medical research? After the window period, they're already in the state's possession. We may as well use them for something beneficial.
Mm.
Imagine Tinder for bodies.
Wait, what would you... Why do you need Tinder for...
Find a match.
Oh. Because you know there are some nasty people out there. Maybe they want to...
Yeah, stop it. Gusekseni, it's too early in the morning for that kind of thinking.
I'm just saying there are some people. I say that the province is shooting themselves in the foot by further admitting that former Gauteng Health MEC Qedani Mahlangu promised to have this internet system up and running in 2016.
We don't trust Qedani with anything.
Exactamundo. No. Well, the DA has taken this moment as well to also stand up and shame the ruling party by saying, well, actually, if you really crunch the numbers and you think about it, it's sad to say that they think that some of the 9 life estimani patients who are still missing could be among those unidentified bodies.
Sure, but this has now been, what, 2 years? They can't have kept them that long. That is just unbelievable.
Well, if the provinces, they've been struggling with creating a system since 2016, which also could mean that they've been struggling
but
to
they couldn't
keep
have
tabs
kept, they can keep a body that long. You like, have you kept meat in your freezer for 6 months?
All right, okay, we got to move on. What else is there?
Yeah,
it's just madness.
This was unnecessary.
So yeah. I don't know what the perfect segue is.
What a morbid way to start October. What's wrong with you? People are trying to have a happy day, Sia.
Do you want some ridiculous crime news? Do you want some random relationship stories? Or do you want some Hollywood news as well? You choose where we go from here.
Are we going to talk about WeWork?
Yes, shame. They've gone out of business, right? They're bankrupt. What
but
happened
they
there?
Are they
40 billion rand valuation.
Oh,
but what's happening?
They
are popping out buildings.
You know, I've been wondering about them because they just opened a new WeWork in Rosebank.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the topic of discussion. I met with someone in New York 2 years ago, and WeWork was the thing. It was the hot new company on the block. You know, where you have these communal workspaces, mm-hmm. and you have like cool things going on in the building. Like you've got someone who's got an artisanal coffee shop that they've opened, and you've got somebody who makes donuts, and you've got somebody who like arranged a putt-putt field up on the roof, and there's all this cool stuff going on. So it makes workspaces super interesting for millennials, and it sounded like a good idea.
Yeah, and you see, I think the WeWork thing, we spoke about Theranos a couple of months ago as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the Ponzi schemes that are coming out of San Francisco, guys.
Yeah, because people are because there's such a push for growth.
And all of this, like, VC-funded growth. Mm. So they raised all this money, and the reason it kind of collapsed now is because they were getting ready for an IPO.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And they've said they're postponing it to next year.
Yeah, because they kicked out the CEO and founder of the business who, and now as we're reading all of the stuff coming out from behind the scenes, creeping out of the woodwork, it's insane what they were doing there. So he and his wife were the two co-founders, and then there was a third partner.
That's right.
But it actually turns out...
Artie Minson and Sebastian Gunningham.
And Rebecca.
That's right, Rebecca.
Who is the wife. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Rebecca actually only became a founder in the kind of morphing of this thing, kind of like
so
this.
She wasn't there.
She wasn't really there at the beginning.
Oh, I stan Rebecca already.
And her brother-in-law is the head architect of all the new buildings that they bring in. Uh-huh. Her cousin's brother's sister's uncle's child runs the school. Oh. There's a foundation that it's like, what are these people doing?
Well, the co-founder and chief executive, Adam Neumann, was ousted from the company, which was until recently the most valuable startup in the US.
Wow.
He was axed after the Wall Street Journal revealed he had taken $700 million out of the company before the IPO. Investors questioned a dual-class share sale that would have given him and his associates total control even after the IPO.
So $700 million.
He took out. Just withdrew.
Just before you're about to list.
From the ATM of the company. Just before you're about to list.
How is that possible?
Listen to this. His eccentric behavior further undermined his position, with reports of marijuana smoking on private jets, tequila shot fueled meetings.
And my very favorite one, you know, because they also have a school for the kids on the premises called We Grow as part of the offering of services.
Okay.
Him showing up to visit his kids in a Speedo and
okay.
Yeah.
And a robe. And guys, an open robe.
You guys are going to like this because we just talked about it. His other eccentric behavior included claims he was working on becoming immortal.
Oh.
So beware. We've got like a little WeWork space going on here. You should look out for me, hun. Watch out.
Yeah, WeWork space. You want to be immortal.
Right. WeWork's new co-chiefs are reportedly planning thousands of job cuts and other cost-saving measures, including the sale of a $60 million jet that was bought last year as they seek to staunch WeWork's massive losses. Some 5,000 employees, one-third of the company's workers, could lose their jobs. They've amassed losses of $3 billion over the last 3 years and could run out of money sometime after the first quarter of 2020, according to Chris Lane, an analyst.
Like, imagine having 5,000 employees and they make nothing.
Yeah, that's
WeWork
right.
WeWork makes nothing.
That's right. They don't have any product.
Essentially, well, they call themselves a kind of tech startup, but they're actually a property business.
And
they were funded, but one of their main funders, some Japanese billionaire.
Oh, that's exciting.
That also, like all of this WeWork story, guys, the podcast coming out of this one, can't wait.
So there it is, from the most valuable startup in the US to basically a disaster.
But, you know, so you must understand that this company is also, they started, I think, in 2009 or 2010. So it's not like it's a one-year-old or two-year-old company. It's certainly not a Thomas Cook, but, I mean, it has been around for
a couple of years.
Interesting, though, how, you know, there's so much of what makes a company valued at X or Y that is purely sentiment. Mm. There's so much of that that has nothing to do with their books. Like, you could be a good old company that makes nuts and bolts, and you've got 100 years of books showing that you sell nuts and bolts, and they're selling at a certain rate. And you can bargain on that, but it could have nothing to do with your valuation.
You know, Coca-Cola was the first company that actually put on its bottom line the equity around its brand. And that brand is sentiment. So how we feel about a brand is all sentiment. But Coca-Cola was one of the first companies that actually put a value to the brand. Now we talk about it like, you know,
everything.
The brand value of anything is, which is what happens with a lot of these startups coming out of San Francisco, right? Coming out of Silicon Valley, is a lot of it is brand value, far more than, which is why WeWork makes nothing. Mm-hmm. And yet it was valued at so much money.
Jesus. Unbelievable.
There are a lot of adjectives that I'd like my leader to be, you know, be used for my leader, but eccentric is not one of them. I hear
that. But eccentric has got brand, you know, it's
eccentric
sexy.
Is what leads to a person rocking up at work in a Speedo and flashing little kids.
Yeah, that's quite scary. I'll give it to you, Sia. That's more than eccentric.
They have five kids, by the way. Him and Rebecca, five kids.
Yeah, well, the kids are fine now.
They're going to have to sell two.
Are they going to sell the kids too?
They're going to have to sell two of the kids to pay for all the debt. They just have to choose which ones are their favorites. They get to keep three, but two of them have to be sold.
Rebecca was actually, she comes from an acting background. You know that? Comes from an acting background.
Not surprised.
She was in films with Lucy Liu.
Okay, very good. So we got How's It China on the way in a short while. We'll be talking about language and also the, what is it, the 70th birthday of the Republic of China?
Yeah, boy. 70 years.
1 October 2019, the National Day of the People's Republic of
1949
China.
1949 it was founded.
That's right. So we've got a good reason to do this today. Stick around. But first, Blind History and Saladin. Take a listen to this. In the west of Jordan is a desert plain of rock and stone. Upon this great plain, nearly 1,000 years ago, the great Muslim soldier, vizier, and king, An-Nasir Salah Din Yusuf ibn Ayyub, emerged from his silk tent to launch a great attack on the castle of Karak. Within a few years, he would defeat all his enemies, recapture Jerusalem, and achieve the expulsion of the Christian crusaders from the Holy Land. But before he could do that, there would be honor and chivalry.
and violence. He would be responsible for all three in excess and would become one of the most celebrated characters in medieval history.
William of Tyre, in A History of Deeds Done Beyond the Sea in 1170, wrote this of the man. He was a man wise in counsel, valiant in war, and generous beyond measure. But the Holy Land is still stained with blood from his lifetime. He is, of course, Saladin, or An-Nasir Salahdin Yusuf ibn Ayyub. That's his full name. He was born in 1137, died in 1193. This is an episode of Blind History with Anthony Medera, CEO of Taylor Blinds and Shutters, and me, Gareth Cliff, just two history nerds. Welcome to another episode. So do you like Saladin?
I enjoy Saladin. Great warrior. And he was very, very successful. Wise in counsel, valiant in war. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what William Tyre said, but he didn't take shit. He really didn't.
No, he was a dangerous guy, and he met his match in a number of crusaders who attempted to overthrow him and take back Jerusalem or take Jerusalem or keep Jerusalem. And one of them was Richard I, the Lionheart, who had this to say about him. He was genuinely struck by Saladin's skill, tolerance, and magnanimity as a ruler and a battlefield commander. So he was born as a Kurd and as a Sunni Muslim in Damascus, in Syria. And what's interesting about him is that he became eventually the first sultan of Egypt and Syria. And this is in the 1100s, which was really an extraordinary time to have been in that position. He ruled at one point over all of Egypt, Mesopotamia, Yemen, and parts of North Africa, as well as obviously Syria, Damascus, and parts of the Holy Land.
One thing that he did say during his time, and that's why he was, I would believe, quite excited to fight the Crusades, was he didn't like fighting Muslim against Muslim.
No.
So when he finally had the chance, when he'd settled everything, he became Sultan of Northern Syria and all the regions you've just mentioned, he turned his attention on Jerusalem and fighting the Crusades. He was one of the most famous Muslim heroes.
Correct. I suppose we felt pressure to include people from all different parts of the world and people of all different faiths. And Saladin would have made this on merit alone. But it's interesting that he is still revered in the Muslim world. His tomb in Damascus is still a place of pilgrimage. And we'll get to how he eventually lived out his life in a second. But I got something wrong. I said he was born in Damascus. He was actually born in Tikrit in Iraq. And he was educated in some of the Greek classics, Euclid, he could quote. He was a very good administrator. He was also good with arithmetic. He had many languages under the belt. He was also fluent in law. And he saw the first crusade when he was a young man, taking the Holy Land. And of course, that kind of made him decide early on that what he wanted to do with his life was free Jerusalem from the Christians. And he became vizier of Egypt in between, where he went and offered his counsel and his military strategy to the rulers of Egypt at the time. And there were many uprisings. There were even assassination attempts against him during that time in Egypt. He became the protege of Nur ad-Din. So Saladin and Nur ad-Din. And Nur ad-Din was sort of his teacher in some ways. And he was the ward for this man who taught him.
And they were
much.
Related.
That's right.
Yeah. His uncle was the Sultan, and that was his son. They walked a long path together, but you could see that path was going to end up where they would have to fight each other. And it just so happened that Nur ad-Din passed away prior to him having to do that, because you see they were on the warpath at some stage in their life. But just getting back to Tikrit in Iraq, Saddam Hussein was born in Tikrit. And he said once that he saw himself as the Saladin of his age.
Yeah, of course, he died more ignominiously than Saladin
than
did.
Saladin, yeah.
And when Saladin died, by the way, since we've got to the end of his story, but we'll go back, when he died, he actually distributed all of his goods to the people. He was not interested in material goods. He wore mostly black in imitation of the Prophet Muhammad. He was a devotee. He believed he also needed to keep himself pure in order to take Jerusalem. It wasn't just a military conquest he was after. He was after a spiritual conquest as well. So he was a very devout man in that respect and quite conscientious about how he behaved. He gave up wine when he was in Egypt and was vizier so that he could begin a life of success, purity, dignity, conquest, and all of those things.
And that's actually when he started battling against the Crusaders. And the Crusades were actually political failure, ultimately. If we look at what's talked about in Muslim books and history, they talk very little about the Crusades, and they actually left very little after all those years that they went battling there. The Mongols left more. We always hear, I suppose, as Westerners, about the Crusades. But they political and a military failure.
Yeah, it was. It was a disaster. I think at first Pope Urban was the one who decided to send the people of Europe into the Holy Land to try and conquer Jerusalem. It was meant to just be pilgrimage before then, and they decided, no, we need to own this. And there were a number of French families who went, and Italians, and even English. But the First Crusade, by some extent, a successful one, 88 years of control over Jerusalem, that came to a swift end once Saladin came into the picture.
Yeah, so he came into the picture, and then that really poked the tiger. There were three kings that came across.
That's right. Guy de Lusignan, who was essentially the king of Jerusalem because his wife's brother, Baldwin, had died. He was known as the Leper King, and he was Baldwin IV. He had only about 375 knights who guarded him in Jerusalem, so Saladin could at any time have pressed the button and gone in there and made mincemeat out of him. But he was actually quite a respectful man, and he wanted to do things right. It didn't matter to him that he just won. He wanted to win properly.
And honorably.
And there were some dishonorable people in the Christian side of things. A guy called Renaud de Châtillon, who was a vicious, quite out of control knight. He didn't seem to submit to the authority of either Guy de Lusignan or anyone else. He had a castle called Carrac, and Saladin attacked and besieged this place twice. Reynold, I think, abducted Saladin's sister at some point. And luckily for him, I suppose in the end, not so luckily, but he didn't do her any damage and she was handed back to Saladin. In the interceding time between that handing back of his sister and the end of Reynold's story, Saladin decided that this guy needed to be taken out. He was a problem. And at the end of the siege of Jerusalem, he captured Reynold de Châtillon, and he had he and de Lusignan sitting at his tent, and he offered Guy iced water. I mean, this was a real treat in the heat of Palestine at that stage. And he gave the drink to Guy, and he just cut off Reynold's head with his sword. Right there and then. And Guy thought he was going to kill him too, and he said, "It is not the wont of kings to kill kings, but that man had transgressed all bounds, and I treat him thus."
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty hectic guy.
That's where you see a different side to him. But you know, Richard the Lionheart, I think his horse was killed in battle. And Saladin sent a new horse to him.
Yeah.
So it just shows you as well, you know, chivalry, that was very interesting. And he had a great reputation with the Westerners.
Yeah.
I think they also, obviously, there was a bit of propaganda because they built it up as the evil enemy that,
right.
Because they wanted to be seen that they're doing.
He was the boogeyman.
Yeah, and they were doing some work of dignity, and they were crusaders.
Well,
you know?
Look, I mean, it wasn't all dignity, because effectively what happened, and Saladin probably did treat the Christians better than they treated the Muslims. When he did take Jerusalem, I think it was in the year 1187, there were about 5,000 Muslim prisoners inside, and there was a guy called Balian of Ibelin who threatened to destroy the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque and execute all 5,000 Muslims who were being held hostage if Saladin didn't come to terms. And he did come to terms. He said, "Fine, we'll have a little period where everybody can leave, where you can get out and we can take the city peacefully, but you're going to have to pay me a ransom." And there was a ransom amount of a certain, I think it was like equivalent to $50 per person now, that had to be paid to him. And they all exited Jerusalem. And that was the end of 88 years of Christian control of that city.
That was incredible. And they never took it back.
No.
They tried, and Richard the Lionheart won a few battles, but never the war.
That's
so
right.
Richard the Lionheart was impressive in battle. He was a good warrior, but he was really up and down. Saladin was already much, much older. So he was really late 40s, early 50s, whereas Richard the Lionheart had only started to bankrupt England.
And he did. He continued to. I mean, they actually had what they called a Saladin tax in England, where he had encouraged his barons to levy taxes on people so that he could keep fighting. And Richard was actually a very poor king. He spent a few months in England during the 11 or 12 years of his reign, and the rest of the time he spent on the battlefields or in prison.
Yeah.
So not the lion heart that the English would like you to believe when you see that statue of him outside the Palace of Westminster.
But the feud passed into legend. People have talked about it for ages and ages. But only in the Western world. I mean, there's not a lot talked about it in the Middle East as such.
Well, there's two great men of the 1100s in one podcast. Blind History. Thank you for listening to Season 2 of Blind History. This is one of the many episodes that we have planned for you, and there are plenty more to come. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. Only on cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.